people that you see out on the street are holding signs saying I'm a virtual fool. And it's sad because a person, they're somebody's kid. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all brothers and sisters. And that would have definitely been me if I didn't have money. So when I see those people, I try to talk to them a little bit if I can. Sometimes you go to the store, you see people outside. I just talk, bring up a problem. I just like to talk to them, see what's going on. Because they are people too, and they need help. And saddest part is those people, most of those people, and they're here suffering and nothing's been done. It's so deep, and that's mental health.
You're listening to Inside Mental Health, a Psych Central podcast where experts share experiences and the latest thinking on mental health and psychology. Here's your host, Gabe Howard.
Hey, everyone. I'm your host, Gabe Howard. Calling in today, we have Dwight Eugene Gooden, nicknamed Doc. At 19, Doc became the youngest starting pitcher in Major League Baseball history until that point. And in 1986, he helped the Mets win the World Series. Doc, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. How's everything going? All that good stuff.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. It is going fantastic. You know, Doc, I want to admit, I had not heard of you until I started researching you for this show. So I did a lot of Googling on who Doc Gooden was. And I got to tell you, two things came up. One, you're incredible baseball career, a Cy Young Award, your 98 mile an hour rising fastball. But as we're going to talk about today, a lot of other stuff came up.
100%.
Yeah. Hit history with addiction, issues with alcohol. But here's the thing that I noticed right here. Here's the thing that kind of struck me. They were never together. You were either the greatest baseball player in like history up until this point, or you were somebody who suffered from addiction, and I'm putting it nicely. Sometimes it is straight up called you an alcoholic. I don't understand why they couldn't put the two together. From your standpoint, you're just Doc. That all lives in one body. What's it like for you to see it all separated out like that?
You know, the thing was, I think a lot of it, I know myself, I was in denial for a long time. And I think the people who really love me, family, they have no history of it. My family, they was in denial. And with baseball people, as long as you're doing well, they underlooked a lot of stuff. But for me, it was like living two different lives. And I remember going to celebrity rehab in 2010. And it was a time for me, I had to remove the mask. And what I mean by removing that mask, getting honest with myself, mention a role that, hey, I have an addiction problem. I have a major problem I had to deal with. This is what I've been suffering with. Yes, I'm a baseball player. On the other hand, I'm basically a junkie. And unless I get this taken care of, I was no different than a junkie living on the street. The only thing, I had money, so I had a place to live, but I was no different than those guys. I mean, I had a serious, serious problem. When I was in New York, things were well, but when I would go home to Tampa, I would turn into this other person. So, you know, it was like two different people, Doc, the entertainer, the white, the junkie. I'm just laying out there the way it was. Until I went and got help, I went to numerous rehab rehabilitations. Got to the point where I knew what I was going to say. I knew what to say. Until 2019, I went to a mental health place called High Focus in New Jersey. That's when I really got the proper help that I needed and found out my demons, what to do, what not to do, why sometimes I would literally be crying going to the drug dealer's house. I couldn't understand that when I got the drugs. I was crying because I didn't want to do it. I knew what was going to take me, but the cravings and the problems that I had, what my brain was telling me was to go get it. And at this mental health place, I mean, at first to go there and admit that I have a mental problem, it's kind of embarrassing because growing up in my household, you know, men don't hug, men don't cry, men, you don't share your person. So I had to relearn all that. And for my kids, I told them what I was going to do. I know they would be picked on in school, all this stuff, your dad's crazy, all these different things. But unless I did this, I would have been dead. It's 100% I would have been dead.
I want to ask you, Doc, it sounds like you use the word junkie and everything that I've read, you know, they use the word alcoholic, person addicted, you know, abusing drugs and alcohol. Everybody was really comfortable talking about you're abusing drugs and alcohol. Like it was just like, hey, of course he abuses drugs and alcohol. Then you went to the mental health rehab clinic and you started addressing your mental health. And suddenly everybody was like, well, you're crazy. He's nuts. Yes. It seems like people were okay with you abusing drugs and alcohol. And by people, I mean like the general public were okay with this idea that a baseball player could be an alcoholic or be a drug addict, but they weren't okay with this idea that a baseball player could be somebody with mental health issues. Is that what you saw it from your perspective as well?
Yeah, you're right on with that 100% because now you deal with something different. Like it's okay. It's acceptable to society that you have a drinking problem or you have a drug problem. Now, when a mental part come in, like, oh, this is serious than we thought, because I think America don't have enough history on mental health. They look at it as just a word, but there's serious people there. And you don't have to be talking to yourself or, you know, seeing things that have a mental problem. My mental problems had me, why was I going to do this? What made me want to do this? Why was I crying going to get this? So I had feelings, and I had to just accept that and not worry about what people are going to say. Just get myself together, because I didn't like the person I was. And when I use the word junkie, it's because I would be stuck in a bathroom for 3 days, getting high. That's a mental problem. I mean, there's something serious wrong with that. I was missing my kids' birthday parties, missing their school activities, all that stuff. That's a mental problem. Something's going on. And for me, once I took care of the mental problem, then the drugs and alcohol became secondary. I was able to understand the problem to that. But before I got the mental health and had to accept that, then I will struggle the rest of my life. I would do good for 4 years. I would do good for 7 years. But eventually, it will come back. I think now, not saying it can't come back, but I'm in a lot better place now to understand it and reach out for help when I need it so it don't come back.
You've been fighting this for a long time, a long time. I'm not trying to call you old, Doc, but
I'll be 60 this year.
Yeah, I mean, 60 years, but it sounds like all the way back in 1986, in the early 90s, in some of your earlier relapses, they didn't address mental health at all. Like, it wasn't even talked about. And I'm not talking about in the society pages. I'm not talking about in rumors. I mean, like, the treatment center. You would go in and be treated for drug and alcohol addiction, and nobody in the medical community brought up this co-occurring disorder or brought up how this is impacting your mental health. Is that true? Did the medical community also separate this out?
Yes. And I think part of that, like, at most programs, they have 28-day or 60-day programs. They kind of found the reason they have 28, 60-day programs because health insurance. Health insurance only covers 28 days out of 60 days. So when your health insurance run out, okay, you're good. You're cured now. And it's sad that it's that way. And now I'm trying to get into what we're doing with teenage addictions and try to expand that where you don't have to have insurance and help these kids before you get to the point where they're incarcerated or, you know, possibly lose their life.
It really resonated with me when you said you're a 60-year-old man and you're an athlete. But first off, the male is enough, right? Being a 60-year-old man is enough not to want to cry. Being an athlete is enough not to want to cry. There's so many stereotypes of why being an African-American man, you can't cry. There's just so many reasons that men cannot cry. And you've said it a few times in this interview. You're like, I was crying. Like you owned it, like it was nothing. Were you always that way? Did you think it was always okay to just cry?
Not in front of my parents, because my dad said, "Men don't cry. You got to be tough." That's why many times I want to go to my dad and just talk to him and say, "Dad, I'm suffering. This is what's going on. This is what's really going on. I'm tired of hiding this." And my mom was great. She was the opposite. You know, strong lady from Georgia, third grade education. But you wouldn't know that if you talked to her. She said, "Son, it's okay." Like, the first time I told her I was going to rehab, she was happy. She said, "Good, you can go there, get the help you need, and come back in. I want my son back." Never knowing for sure I was doing drugs, she knew something was wrong. She thought it was just alcohol, where alcohol was accepted. She didn't know the drugs. And my dad never said one word when I told him that. I know I had hurt him because he never said anything. So I know I hurt him bad. But sometimes you just want to tell your friends how you feel, but I couldn't do it. Many times I was in my house by myself, and I was just bust out crying. I mean, screaming out loud, crying, begging for help, praying. Get out of this mess, because I was stuck and couldn't get out of it. But then at the same time, I was put on a pedestal by everyone, so I couldn't tell them I had this problem real bad and it's getting worse, it's eating at me. I would just say, you know, I'm not doing what I say. Okay, you know, I just relax. Or they'll say, don't do drugs, just drink. Alcohol is a drug, and I know if I do one, I'm going to do the other. But nobody will understand that. So I just had to be a better man, and I think by the mercy of God, kind of just told me it's okay to reach out and get help. And the last time I got in trouble in 2019, they wanted to send me back to rehab. I said, no, I need more help than that. I know all the stuff in rehab. I've been in, I think, 7 or 9 of them. Let me go get some mental help. I need to go to a mental institution. And they looked at me like, you serious? You're not that crazy. You're not that bad off. What is not that bad off? I've been doing drug stuff over 25 years. And a lot of times, I didn't want to do that. So it's a problem. It's a major problem. And by the grace of God, I'm still here. So by still been here. And I still think high focus. I'm still in contact with high focus today. And I have to. And I'm not afraid to admit that, because I know what pain looks like. I know what pain feels like. Anybody going through it, I want them to know it's okay to go get help if you need it. Be yourself. And to me, that's being strong and wise. But to sit back and worry about what America's going to say and people, society's going to say, I mean, you're just killing yourself and destroying anybody that loves you going down with you.
It's fascinating to me. As you pointed out, you had a 25-year history of abusing drugs and alcohol. And some of the things that it cost you was an entire season of baseball.
Yes.
That's a really big consequence for a baseball player who cannot play for an entire year because of alcohol and addiction issues. And yet, when you said, I want mental health help, they said, well, you're not that sick.
Oh, no.
I mean, how can you miss a year of work? How you missed an entire baseball season, and they're like, well, listen, at least you're not crazy. It's utterly fascinating to me that anybody would table it that way. Yet, I know you're right. I absolutely unequivocally know you're right. And I want to point out to our audience, the reverse is also true. I live with bipolar disorder, and in my community, people are like, well, at least you're not a drunk. At least you're not a drug addict. At least you're not a, I'm like, what are we doing? We're really what are we doing? We're all suffering. We're all having these issues. And frankly, we have, it co-occurs much, much more than we're comfortable admitting. And yet we still keep it separate. I want to ask you though, Doc, you missed an entire year of baseball. Now, to a lot of people, that's the quote unquote rock bottom. You missed a year of playing baseball, and yet you still relapsed multiple times since that. Can you talk about this concept of rock bottom and why missing a year of baseball wasn't enough to get you well?
Yes, I think for me, most people, and they label it rock bottom. I think to me, and what I went through, rock bottom is when you're dead. That's the way I see it, because so many times I thought I hit rock bottom. It was rock bottom for a year, 2 years, but it wasn't completely rock bottom because I hadn't got it yet. I hadn't got to the point where I understood what was going on with addiction. And then there's no cure for it. I mean, the only thing you can do is day by day go to meetings, have counselors, and stay away from places and people that you use with. I understand that. But for me, when I missed that year of the season of baseball, and baseball is all I know. That's the only job I ever had since I was 9 years old, baseball. And when I read that letter, Bud Selig said, suspended for an entire year, 1995 season. I read the letter over and over thinking I missed something. And when it's true, I went out that night on like a 3-day binge. Instead of saying, okay, I missed it, let me get myself together, 3-day binge. There's a gentleman named Ray Negron that lives in St. Petersburg at the same time. He works with the Yankees still to the day. And Bob Clappy, is a writer in New Jersey, told me he was a guy, because I was trying to go to Japan. I was in so deep now about my addiction, I still want to go play baseball. I said, hey, maybe I can go to Japan and play. So he said, yeah, this guy Ray Negron can get to Japan. I called Ray up. Ray came over. We never met, but we lived there. We had mutual friends. So he said, I can get you in Japan. You got to get in shape first. You got to get your life together first. He said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to work out every day. After that, I got a guy, Ron Doc. He's going to take you to some AA, NA meetings. Then we'll have lunch. We're going to do that every day. And once you get right, we'll go to Japan. And so I said, okay. So I started doing that. So once I started training, going to meetings every day, hanging around good people, hanging around people in recovery, so I feel good. Then I told Ray, I said, hey, I don't want to go to Japan now. They good because I wasn't going to send you to Japan anyway. But he jump-started on my way back. And so I started spending more time with my kids, taking my kids up for school. Then I started loving myself again. Things started coming together. And then by the end of 95, the suspension was uplifted. I talked to a couple of teams. I signed with the Yankees. I met Mr. Steinbrenner. Mr. Steinbrenner talked with me and my dad. He said, all I want you to do, get your life together. What have you been doing with your time away from baseball? He asked me all those questions before we even talked about baseball. And then the next day, we went back and we signed a contract. But that's one of the best things that happened. But just like you said, the relapse still came after that, after I retired. I think I retired. Looking back at it, I retired too soon.
Gabe Howard here to tell you about the Inside Bipolar podcast from Healthline Media.
He does the show with me, Dr. Nicole Washington, a board-certified psychiatrist.
That's right. A guy living with bipolar and a psychiatrist team up to discuss living well with bipolar disorder.
Listen now on your favorite podcast player or visit psychcentral.com/IBP to learn more.
Subscribe now so you don't miss out. And we're back talking with Major League Baseball star Dwight Doc Gooden.
2000, I hurt my knee, so they said I was going to miss some time. And I would miss 3 months, and then I'll have to rehab 3 months. By that time, the season would be over. But Mr. Summer would say, oh, you can come work for me. So without taking time to think about it, I retired. in the next 2 years, it was ironic that during spring training, I got arrested both times during spring training. 2 years, because psychologically, I still want to be playing baseball. Baseball is still going on. And that time would come up, I'd be depressed, you know, everything going. I'd go right back to drinking, drugging. They say, you know, I got arrested. But it happened both times we found out while I was in the mental health program. That was happening because technically I was supposed to have been on the baseball field. I retired too soon. So that was part of it. I didn't justify anything.
It's really fascinating to me the way that the world works, right? As I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, this guy's he won a World Series. He's a Cy Young Award winner. He was a millionaire. And I'm super focused on that. And I want to own it. I keep saying society and the listeners think this. I think it too. I'm like, I'm sitting across from a multimillionaire that very, very few people will win a World Series. And that's incredible. But the thing that you keep saying over and over again is time away from your kids. You keep bringing up your kids as the biggest thing that you lost. And I'm starting to feel a little guilty that I think the biggest thing that you lost, and many of the listeners think that the biggest thing that you lost was this time at baseball. But you bring up your kids a lot. I think we forget that celebrities and athletes are in fact human. Can you talk about the human toll of this outside of baseball and the millions and the things that people write about?
Yes, 100%. Because like baseball, like you said, I won the Cy Young, I won the Rookie of the Year, I won the Rusher, I won every award a baseball player could possibly win. But I can't get back the time that I lost with my kids. I mean, I lost like 15 years where I don't remember. It was like a blackout when my kids were growing up. You can't get that back. Missing school activities, missing Little League games, all this stuff, missing Little League play. I mean, kids plays. Missing now my kids, now I'm a grandfather, and when I see my grandkids, that's where I remember my kids at. So from their space to there, I miss that. And your kids suffer just like you. I had one son get held back a grade because when I got incarcerated, he gave up. He'll go to school, but he didn't want to do anything. That's because I hurt that kid real bad by him doing that. And you can't get that back. Building the trust with your kids, being accountable against your kids. And one of the saddest things that still bothered me that I did through my addiction, instead of coming home and admitting I was having an affair, I said, well, if I get a divorce, I don't have to explain that. Not knowing that I'm divorcing my wife and the four kids. The nation took me to that point. I was at that low and just that sad and creepy as a person. I divorced my wife and four kids so I can go get my own apartment and get high as long as I want. I don't have to explain that to nobody. And today, that stuff still eat at me. But I had a thing with guilt, shame, embarrassment I had to deal with too. But my therapist told me, she said, if God can forgive you, family can forgive you, how come you can't forgive yourself? At that time, I didn't want to forgive myself because it was already premeditated. I was going to use that to continue to get high, keep drinking. So I wouldn't have learned that at a rehab. I had to learn that at the mental institution. And so I'm so thankful for those places and glad I went there to get that and get back on track. Today, I'm accountable to my kids. They love me. We have a great relationship. I got an iPhone that I don't know how to use, as you see. But I got it so I can FaceTime my grandkids and great-grandkids. And life is great. But I do know if I lose focus, all that can be lost again. So just day-to-day enjoy life.
You talked about your family forgiving you. Have they forgiven you, and was that hard fought?
That was hard fought because one example, when my kids, my boys, they're grown now. When I was in school, I told them I'm going to pick them up from the bus stop. When I got to the bus stop, the bus was going down on the bus. Because so many times I told them I was going to pick them up, I would never show. So they said, I said, we're going to get on the bus. So they got on the bus and left. So it takes time over time over time. And I think now they forgive me because if I go in the bathroom and I'm in there for an hour, they're not going to come knock on the door. Or my girlfriend will come kick the door in like she normally do. They say, okay, dad's not paying her business. He's okay. Well, in the past, I've had my mom kicking the door. My nephew, Gary Sheffield, who plays, he kicked in the door, wondering what you're doing. And now, if I say I'm coming somewhere, I'm going to be somewhere, they know I'm going to do that. But I had to allow them to build trust on their time and forgive them on their time. I can't say, look at me now, I've been good for a year, you guys should forgive me. They had to do it on their own time because, remember, some of these kids, their whole life are being high. So now it's just a matter of time after time. But if I say, hey, I don't feel good, if I don't return a call, they know something's going on, I'm busy, not thinking, dad's out getting high again. But that's one of the best opportunities and gifts you can get. Have your kids.
What was going on that made you think that your only choice was drugs and alcohol? What was going on in your mind that you looked at all of that and you were like, you know what? This is my best path forward.
I think what happened with me, I started drinking when I was like 12 years old. because I saw my dad drinking. So I used to go in the refrigerator when he went there. I'd drink my beer. It tastes pretty good. Then when I became adult, I started getting my own beer. And then it came alcohol. I started smoking marijuana. And one day in 86, I went home, going to get some marijuana. And my cousin was like a street guy. He had girls working for him. I mean, he sold drugs. I went to his house to get some marijuana. He didn't have any. He went to go get it. And while he went to go get it, I'm looking around his house, and he's got all these different rooms. There's two girls, you know, making out. And I go in the room, obviously. You know, I'm 20 years old. I'm curious. They're like, hey, what are you doing? You want to join us? I said, yeah, I want to join you. They say, well, hey, do some of this. They had cocaine. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. They said, well, you can't join unless you do this. But women is my weakness, too. I struggle with women all the time when I was younger. And so I tried it the first time so I could join with them. And the first time I tried it, I fell in love with it. Not knowing, but I became addicted. I found out the first time I hit it. So I did it. Hit the coke, joined these girls. And they say, you know, I want to come get marijuana no more. I was coming to get the cocaine. And for the first probably year, I was okay. But then it was getting worse and worse. And the, circumstances were getting worse and worse as well. And I became addicted right away. And so anytime I would feel bad or feel good, that was like my scapegoat. That takes me away from the world.
And you were a professional baseball player while this was going on. I want to make sure that we remember that you, 20 years old, you were a major league baseball player.
Oh, I was in the prime of my career at that time. Not to blow smoke, but I was the best pitcher in baseball at that time. And when I went to Tampa, I was like one of the biggest drug addicts. So it's like two sides. I'm just giving to you three.
How did that live inside you to be both? It's incredible to me. And again, to the average person, they're thinking, you're blowing it. You're blowing it. You're the best pitcher in the world and you're doing cocaine. Why? Yeah. Why are you doing this?
It became, and when people say it's a disease, and it took me a long time to admit there was a disease, I said, you know, I'm just weak. Like, I can fix my curveball wasn't working. I knew how to fix that. If I couldn't throw a ball I wanted, I knew how to fix that. But with drugs, I didn't know how to fix that because I thought, if I take 2 days off, I'll be fine. If I don't go around Ricky's house, I'll be fine. But it don't work that way. Until you go inside a place and use the tools that they give you, then you start yourself on recovery. But it's a lifetime commitment. My problem was I was dealing with a two-headed sword. What I mean by that, when times were bad, I would use. And when times were good, I was celebrating use. And it was my way of escaping. And then the problem is, like you said, why would you do cocaine? Here's the thing that kept me sick for a long time. When I use cocaine, and then now I would be out, except 3 day binge. And then when you sober up, now you got to deal with the guilt, the shame, the embarrassment. Why you miss your mom's birthday party? Why you wouldn't let your daughter's, you know, recital? Now I would get high again, self-medicate to cover all that up. And now you're right back in that cycle again. And I was stuck in a cycle of guilt and shame when I sobered up. And then when I was high, you try to stay in that. And it's just, I don't know how I'm alive to tell you the truth, but thank the good Lord have me here. Tell my story and be straight, because there's people did a lot less than me that lost their lives, and I'm still here. I think that's the only reason I'm here, is to share my message and turn my mess into messages and help the younger generation come around. That's what I believe.
Doc, as we're nearing the end of the show, I want to ask you, you've relapsed multiple times. You've been sober since 2019. You've gotten help for mental health. You're sharing your story. You're helping people understand that they need to look at their entire bodies, their physical health, their mental health. They need to pay attention to co-occurring disorders. I mean, I love your message and I love your story, but I have to ask before we leave, why is this time different? Why are you not going to relapse this time, considering all of the other past relapses?
I think the main thing, like, you can't never say never, they say. Well, I say that because if I do the same thing that I'm doing today and I did yesterday, I'm going to do it tomorrow and I'll be fine. I'm around some good people and I'm not afraid to let somebody know if I'm not feeling good today and how I feel. I'm not afraid to tell somebody, no, I'm not going to go to that event today. I can be honest with myself and be okay with it because I was a people pleaser for a long time as well. So I can just be okay with saying that person don't like me or I can't make this person like me. I'm fine. I'm going to be okay. And the people that I'm dealing with now are very good people to me. They want to tell me what I need to hear, not what I want to hear. I think that helps a lot. And not to just get off subject, but we have this new diary supplement that we use too. It's called Aquilogy. It's a thing that helps the brain. It really works. And I'm not blowing smoke, but I'm just sharing from my experience. Because like I say, if I help someone make a life change, I'm willing to do that. And that really helps me as well. And you can take it with medication and just give it a try. You know, if you really want to help yourself, and it helps with the mental aspect, the thinking, helps the brain function better. It just puts you in a better place because like I say, depression is real. All this stuff is real. You know, you hear these big words. And I know when I was a kid, I didn't know what that means. My dad just told me, son, just go out and play. Son, forget about it. Son, don't share this. But I had to relearn all this over. And Aquagy helps me do that as well. And I'm not just going to smoke. Try it for yourself. And I think it really works. It works for me anyway.
Doc, I know you have your assistant in the room. Where can folks find you online?
Hey, come in.
It's Dwight Gooden. You can just go to his page. On Instagram, you can just go to Dwight Gooden on Instagram.
Dwight Gooden on Instagram. Of course, we can Google Doc because you're famous. You'll come up everywhere. You got your own cards and everything.
Yes.
Doc, thank you so much for taking the time today. And thank you so much for your hard work as it comes to helping people lead better lives and sharing your story and being so honest about it. I can't tell you the message of pay attention to your mental health. And it's a powerful message. And I'm glad you could be honest with our listeners today. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. You're doing a great job in helping me share the message. So keep doing your thing too, buddy. And thanks for having me.
Oh, you are very welcome. I want to give a great big thank you to all of our listeners. My name is Gabe Howard, and I am an award-winning public speaker, and I could be available for your next event. I also wrote the book Mental Illness is an Asshole and Other Observations, which you can get on Amazon. However, you can get a signed copy with free show swag or learn more about me just by heading over to GabeHoward.com. Wherever you downloaded this episode, please follow or subscribe to the show. It is absolutely free, and you don't want to miss a thing. And hey, listen up. Could you do me a favor? Recommend the show. Share it in a support group. Share it on social media. Send somebody a text message. Send somebody an email. Mention it at your next outing, because sharing the show is how we're going to grow. I will see everybody next Thursday on Inside Mental Health.
You've been listening to Inside Mental Health, a Psych Central podcast from Healthline Media. Have a topic or guest suggestion? Email us at show@psychcentral.com. Previous episodes can be found at psychcentral.com/show or on your favorite podcast player. Thank you for listening.